I want to introduce our audience to Sarah Karloff. I've been fortunate enough to spend some time with you, and boy, it's been a pleasure talking about Boris Karloff, who happens to be my favorite actor, and the folks at Upcoming Dis already know that. So I want to welcome you to our site.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And of course, one of the main reasons we're talking is because of the release of the Thriller Collection on DVD. But if you don't mind, I'd like to get some background stuff, go back a little bit further for a couple of questions. And, you know, the question that I get asked most when people talk about someone like Boris Karloff is, how the heck did a guy like that get involved in being a horror actor, getting into that kind of situation?
Well, he would have answered that by saying just jolly good luck. He had been around for a long time, and actually Frankenstein was his 81st film, and no one had seen the first 80. It was a matter of being on the right corner at the right time, I think. Of course, had Lon Chaney Sr. Lived, he would have done it. He would have played the part. And then,
absolutely.
Of course, the part was offered to Bela Lugosi, and Bela turned it down. And then James Whale spotted my father in the commissary on the lot, and asked my father if he would test for the role, and thanks to the genius of Jack Pierce's makeup and the combination of director James Whale and Jack Pierce's makeup and my father's interpretation of the role, it became cinema history. No one expected it to be the success that it was, and certainly no one expected the creature to become the star of the film. They all expected Colin Clive to be the star. My father wasn't even invited to the premiere.
Wow.
And but it became cinema history, and it became an iconic film. So it just was a magical marriage of talents, and just a pivotal difference in my father's life, both personally and professionally.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the real testament to your father's ability as an actor is the fact that we have a part here that's completely covered in makeup, a part that doesn't speak, at least in the first film, and yet his facial expressions and his ability to bring sympathy to this creature, just, I don't think anybody could have expected it. I don't think it could have happened without that.
Well, I do think it is a combination of a great many things. I think, indeed, it was my father's sympathetic
yes.
portrayal of the role. He understood that the creature really was the victim, and he brought that to the role. He always said, "Kids got it." They understood that the creature was the pathetic victim and not the villain. And I think that came through in my father's portrayal. The gentleness of my father's own nature and character came through in his portrayal. And I think that's what made it his particular. A version is what has stood the test of time,
yes.
rather than a stumbling, bumbling idiot or a vicious
right.
villain. And I think that's what's made it so iconic through the years.
And in many ways, the creature is a child. I mean, and your father kind of brings that across. He's experiencing the world for the first time in this manner.
Indeed. And also the abandonment of his creator.
Yes. Now, your father paid, and a lot of people don't know this, your father paid a dear physical price throughout his entire life for taking on that role with the heavy boots and I know back trouble and such. How did he ever feel bitter about the physical costs he paid for that role?
Oh, no. My father really was grateful for the opportunity to have that sort of signature role in his repertoire. I mean, as I say, he had been around 10 years in repertory theater in British Columbia and then 10 years in Hollywood before he was offered this role. And so there was certainly no grumbling or grousing about it. And he had had, he'd had a bit of a bad back before. This certainly did exacerbate it. He ultimately had 3 back surgeries. He lost 25 pounds during the making of Frankenstein because it was shot. Many of the scenes were shot outdoors in August in the heat in Los Angeles.
Yes.
So indeed, he did pay quite a physical price for it, but. He was arthritic later in life, early in life, but later in life certainly. And what this added, what part that this played in it, I'm not sure. He wasn't sure. It didn't really matter. He was just grateful for the differences this role played in his career.
That's great. Now, another film, which is a very, very, it's a much more obscure film that your father's in, but actually my favorite, and that is Val Lewton's Body Snatcher.
Oh, that was a fabulous role. All 3 of the Val Lewton films were really...
Isle of the Dead's another real good one, but Body Snatcher is by far my favorite.
Oh, indeed. And it's a wonderful script, a wonderful part. It was so well directed. The acting was marvelous. All the scenes were shot so atmospherically in all 3 of the Val Lewton films. Those 3 films really were a joy to my father to be in, and he enjoyed Val Lewton and liked him so much. They both were very well-read, well-educated men, and those 3 films really gave my father's career a well-needed boost at that time.
Yeah, they certainly did. And you know, one of the things that I like about The Body Snatcher, and I've actually had a chance to talk to Robert Weiss about it, and that is, there's a big misconception out there, as I'm sure you've heard many, many times, that your father and Bela Lugosi had this big hatred for each other, which couldn't be further from the truth. And Robert had said that when that film was made, Lugosi was quite ill and not able to really do a lot of his work, and that it was the generosity of your father, how he just took him under and supported him every way he could to help to build the performance that they had together into what it was. And that's a testament to your father, not only as an actor, but as the kind of person that he was.
Well, my father was really a very, very nice man. And, Bela was not well treated by the studios. And he certainly was such a fine actor and had been classically trained, whereas my father had not. And my father recognized that and hated to see the problems that Bela experienced and the health problems and the way that the studios were treating Bela. My father hated to see that.
Yeah, I know it. I know he did. And like I said, that was the thing that Robert Weiss makes very clear when he talks about it, is that, you know, your father was very generous to him, and it was a struggle for him at the time, and he just did everything he could to make what those scenes were. And that jolly monologue he delivers as he's about to take care of Lugosi's character is to me one of the finest scenes your father's ever played.
Well, there are some wonderful scenes in that, and my father loved doing those films.
Now, what about Target? Now, here he's playing almost a fictional version of himself. What did your dad think of Target?
Oh, he loved working with Peter Bogdanovich. He really, really enjoyed it. He admired Peter's talent and energy and creativity, and he had such a good time doing that film and recognized, of course, that he was playing himself. I mean, brilliant casting as an aging horror film star. And it really was the last film of any merit that my father did. And unfortunately, it came out at being a film about a sniper. It unfortunately came out at the time of the Martin Luther King assassination.
Yes.
And the Bobby Kennedy assassination, so that it had a very short screening life and was pulled from the theaters. But it now has had such a wonderful resurrection and has been made almost into a cult film. It's a fabulous film, and my father has this wonderful scene in which he has this long speech, and he did it all in one take, and when he finished, the entire crew stood up and applauded, and that literally brought a tear to my father's eye. I mean, he just at that point in his life and that point in his career, that meant so much to him to receive the praise of the people behind the scenes and his peers. It just really was so rewarding to him to do that film and receive the accolades of his co-workers.
Well-deserved accolades. I'm sure many of them were just awed that they were getting to work with Boris Karloff.
Well, he was such a modest man, and so humble and genuinely so that he was humbled by their accolades.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. And the last project I want to talk about before we get into Thriller is, of course, something that's a tradition in our household every Christmas, and that is a screening of How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Oh, yes.
I have to believe that for you, having your father do that voice, that's got to be something that every Christmas brings a smile to your face.
Oh, it does indeed. I mean, he loved that. He called me the night it was going to air for the first time to be certain that I sat down with my boys and watched it. And, I mean, it's such a wonderful legacy to have left to his family, to his grandchildren, and now my grandchildren. I mean, it's just lovely. He of course, is one of the quote-unquote owners of Halloween, and now to have as addition to his legacy this wonderful tradition at Christmas time is just a lovely legacy to have left his family, and it's wonderful, and it just adds to the multi-generational appeal of his work and his fame.
Yeah, it certainly does. Now, how did he get that part? What made someone think that Boris Karloff would be the perfect choice for this?
Well, you know, my father could do absolutely anything with his eyes and with his voice. Mm-hmm. And he could be melodious or mellifluous with his voice.
Yes.
You know, he could just sing with his voice, not literally sing.
No, I understand.
But he could soothe you and be sweet and gentle. He did a lot of children's albums, recordings, Hans Christian Andersen and Rudyard Kipling, and they were just wonderful children's albums. So I'm sure for that reason was why his work on the Reader's Digest radio programs and his children's recordings made him a natural to come to mind. And just the fact that he could indeed do anything with his voice. His voice was instantly recognizable. When you were doing a children's recording and you needed a voice that could be both grim and grisly and sweet and gentle, his name, his voice would come to mind.
Was he originally slated to do both the Grinch and the narrator, or was he originally just
going
to do
one? I think so.
Yeah?
I think so, yeah.
Well, and that's part of the amazing thing, too, is how different he makes those voices sound. You know when the Grinch is talking, you know when the narrator's talking.
Oh, absolutely.
It's wonderful. Well, we should get on to Thriller.
All right.
A wonderful television program that your father hosted and even starred in many episodes. So how did he get involved in this television production?
Well, you know, at that time he was doing a lot of television work. He was featured as a guest on all the prominent shows of the day, a lot of which he was spoofing his own boogeyman image, and
sure,
which he loved doing. He also had two other television series, Colonel March and The Veil.
Right.
But Thriller was just, he loved doing Thriller because he got so involved with it. He knew the material, he didn't just host it, he knew the material of each episode so that his introduction for each episode was really an introduction for that particular episode. It wasn't just a walk-on introduction.
Yeah.
think that was part of the why he was such an integral part of Thriller.
Yeah.
Each and every week.
And how involved did he get in things like cast choices or story choices and
those
kind of things?
I don't think he was involved, certainly, with any of the casting. I think the material was so good. And if you look at the variety of people who appeared.
Yes, a who's who of actors of the time.
Oh, absolutely. And the writers and the directors. I mean, it was everybody's show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was absolutely everybody's show. And whereas Hitchcock's show was Hitchcock's show.
Right.
And this was everybody's show. Everybody wanted to have a role on Thriller because the material was so good and so varied.
Mm-hmm.
You absolutely couldn't predict the storyline, the outcome,
right,
and what type of story it was going to be.
Now, did he have any trouble with because some of these episodes were quite scary and pushed the boundaries? Did they have any trouble with the censors at the time, or getting some of that material on television?
I don't know, but they certainly. I mean, they're scary now.
Yeah, they pushed the boundaries. There's no question.
They certainly did.
Now, his introduction and epilogue that he did, I assume he had some input into those skits and those sketches that he did. Where did some of that come from?
Oh, I think from his own broad-based reading and his own knowledge of what the episode was about.
Yeah, and that's something that really should be brought up, too. Your father was quite a well-read.
Oh, he was very well educated.
He
was educated formally for the diplomatic service in England, as most of his seven brothers were serving in the diplomatic service, consular service in England, or China, or India.
Yeah.
And then he was a voracious reader, and his favorite author was Joseph Conrad. And he just, and it was a lifetime passion of his, along with the British game of cricket and
mm-hmm.
gardening and animals. But he was just a voracious reader, so that he was a very, very intelligent, articulate man with a wonderful vocabulary and command of the English language, so that he had done. He had collected his favorite mystery stories or horror stories and compiled them into volumes and then written the foreword for those books.
Sure.
And he had not done any writing per se of mystery stories, but he was so well aware of what of good writing and good storylines, that he was well qualified to have a hand in those introductions and epilogues.
Now, he also starred in some of these stories
in
Thriller.
Did.
Did he enjoy doing the dual role?
Oh, sure. You know, once a ham, always.
So when Thriller finally ended, did that end because of ratings? Did it end because people were finished? Or do you know how?
Oh, no. It ended because it was giving Hitchcock a run for his money, and Hitchcock had more clout at the studio and went to the bosses and said, enough is enough.
Yeah, I imagine it would be giving Hitchcock a run for his money. Did your father ever meet Hitchcock?
Oh, they were, surprisingly, they were friends, and yet Hitch still did that.
Wow, so Hitchcock is kind of responsible for trying to get rid of the competition, huh?
He did get rid of the competition.
Flexing his muscles.
Yep.
Well, that's unfortunate, because watching this set, and it's great that it's all available in one DVD set now, because for a long time, there's many episodes I'd never seen. The selections that had been available before were quite limited. And the same episodes, they seemed they would release all the time. and now it's nice to have them all because it's.
I know it is. It's lovely, and Image Entertainment did just a beautiful job.
Yeah, they really did. So, in closing here, a couple questions. What do you think your father's favorite role, if he could pick one, would have been?
You know, I think he had derived great pleasure from different roles at different times for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the Val Lewton work, because it gave his career such a boost when it needed it. I think spoofing his own boogeyman image with his great friends, Vincent Price and Basil Rathbone and Peter Lorre
in the Poe movies.
Yeah, in the Comedy of Terrors and The Raven.
Yes.
certainly targets with Peter Bogdanovich, but Frankenstein took him over the hump and made such a huge difference in his life personally and professionally. He often referred to the creature as his best friend, with tongue in cheek. But he, excuse me, he never talked down about the roles. He made it was his decision to only play it three times because he was protective of that role. He
right.
didn't want to see it diminished into the brunt of bad scripts or bad jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry. It's okay. What about for you? What of all of your father's parts, what still brings the biggest smile to your face when you see it?
Oh, I love The Grinch. I love Targets. I think it's probably one of my favorite films. I love A Comedy of Terrors. Those are probably my favorite. I love. I really enjoy The Body Snatcher because of the outstanding acting in it.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have a favorite per se. I just enjoy watching him do something and that I know he was passionate about doing and grateful for the opportunity to be involved in a profession that he adored.
Yeah.
And be able to do it all his life.
Yeah, that's true. Well, do me a favor and tell the folks what Karloff Enterprises is up to nowadays and what they can do to help keep your father's legacy.
Well, I will, but first I'd like to remind people that my father was one of the founding members of the Screen Actors Guild.
Yes,
and
he was.
His card was number 9. And that really was some of the work of which he was most proud.
Yes, he was. That's right.
Yeah, and that was really dangerous work for those actors because they were putting their careers on the line. It was the formation of a union against the all-powerful studios at that time, and it was work that my mother used to tell the story that they'd go to parties and they'd dance by one another on the dance floor and say, meeting Tuesday night at so-and-so's house and dance on by. But my father was really proud to be involved with those other actors that had had the courage of their convictions and helped form the Screen Actors Guild.
And he certainly knew what it was like to have some harsh working conditions.
Yes, yes, he did. And so did those other actors. And it was really important at that time.
Well, it's still important.
Yes. It is. It is.
Absolutely.
And so Karloff Enterprises, I formed Karloff Enterprises in the early 90s to be able to protect the legacy my father left and to oversee the use of his persona, his name and his likeness, and to make certain that it, when my father's name and likeness was used, was it was done appropriately and tastefully. Now, just in the last couple of years, I've been working on a project with the comic books that he had in the 1960s, Boris Karloff's Tales of Mystery.
Yes.
And there were 97 issues, and I was so lucky to team up with Dark Horse Comics, and they have done the most wonderful, beautiful job of through their archival division of republishing these comics in hardback format, and they have published the first three volumes now, and each volume, each hardback volume, has about five or six of the original comics in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the introduction to in volume one, and Hugh Hefner wrote the introduction in the second one because he's a huge Karloff fan.
Yeah.
John Landis wrote the introduction in the recently released volume three. Actually, it was released at the same time the Thriller collection came out.
Uh-huh.
And these beautiful hardback volumes are available on Amazon.com and in comic book stores and in Barnes & Noble, and we offer them also on our website, which is www.karloff.com.
Yeah, and we'll put a link to that as well on the post so people can just click right to it.
And they're just wonderful collector's items, and Volume 4 will be out in January, and then I think the fifth one will be the final volume, and it will be out sometime later in 2011. But they're beautiful. They've redone the artwork. It's just beautifully cleaned up, and Dark Horse has been wonderful to work with, and they've just done the most wonderful job with my father's comics, and it's a project I'm so pleased to have available once again for the fans.
Well, that's great, and Karloff Enterprises does a great job of keeping the legacy alive, and the folks can help by going there and supporting it. In fact, I just did the Busch Gardens Hall of Scream wearing my Karloff Enterprises shirt that you gave me years ago, and that's where I take to all these haunted horror events.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, we have fun with our website. We have a gift shop, and we have a tribute section. I get a lot of wonderful letters from my father's fans, and we have artist gallery where people send me their wonderful Karloff art, and we just post it up there to give the artist exposure, and we offer books and artwork and t-shirts and various things on our gift shop. So I'd love the fans to visit our website.
Yeah, they really should, and I have to thank you personally because you did a lot to help me with the song that I had written for your father, the Man Created Man song, and that always meant a lot to me, your support on that.
Well, it's my pleasure.
It's really wonderful. Well, listen, I kept you longer than I promised, and I apologize for that. I know you're very busy, but the fans should really, really be grateful that you're out there, you know, keeping the integrity of the legacy alive and keeping it alive. And I want to thank you for them, and I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Well, it's the fans that keep the legacy alive, and I want to thank them, and I want to thank you and everybody. The fans are just—it's all about the fans, and it's thanks to them that the generation after generation is still aware of my father and his work, and appreciates it, and is introduced to his legacy. And I want to thank the fans. He belongs to them.
Yeah. Well. Thank you for that, and thank you for your time. And let's not wait 2 years before we talk again.
Okay, I look forward to it, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you, too, and also Merry Grinch Christmas coming up.
Okay, thank you.
Well, you take care, Sarah. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it's lovely talking to you, Gino.
You take care.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.